It's Monday, the 6th of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Mitch McGarry and Robert Sacre. The show brought to you by Fantrax and Nathan to the Hernandez. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like Fantrax and like Nathan to the Hernandez, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you could become that sponsor. Thank you to Nathan and thank you to everyone who has done that throughout the season. It's been superb, and a couple more new reviews rolling in overnight as well, which is tremendous that people are still taking the time to leave reviews for the show, and it does go a long way into ensuring the viability of this show, which I believe some of you enjoy, which is always great to hear. We are going to be doing the Detroit Pistons season in review, so without further ado,
let's get to it.
The Detroit Pistons, a team that's been striving for that playoff berth for quite a few seasons now, and they made no bones about the fact that they wanted the playoff spot. They didn't care if they were the 8th seed or the 7th seed, obviously the higher the better, but they wanted to get in. They wanted to make themselves known and wanted to show that they were improving and get themselves into the playoffs, and that's exactly what they did. They made ballsy moves in the offseason, they made ballsy moves during the season, and it paid off. They finished with a 44-38 record, and they got beaten by the Cavs, swept in the first round, but it wasn't a smashing. It wasn't the sort of smashing the Cavs are copping from the Warriors at the moment. They were in most games. Yes, they couldn't get over the hump, but just to get in there and play those four playoff games is a big step forward for this team, considering how young they all are, how much room they've got to grow as well. And as a Pistons fan, I don't think that this season could be seen as anything other than a great success, because you've got these young players. You're not relying upon veterans who are going to decline. You've had surprise outputs from guys like Marcus Morris, steps forward from players like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Andre Drummond. And the future is relatively bright in Detroit. They, in terms of free agency, they're not going to be big players, because their thought process was, we're not going to be attracting the free agents in free agency. Let's go and spend the money on young players who we think we can get, which is what they did with Reggie Jackson, what they did with Toby Harris as well. And I think it's going to set them in pretty good stead, because their team is looking pretty, not great, not your top four, but solid enough to continually improve. And with the young core that they've got and Stan Van Gundy in charge, I think things are looking definitely up for the Detroit Pistons. They have pick 18 and pick 49 in the next draft, and 49 is not going to do a huge amount, but pick 18 is something they can just use to solidify some depth, because they were the team with probably the worst bench unit in the entire NBA, and just to get another player who can play off that bench, and you hope that someone coming in can play off the bench and contribute a little bit, that's what they'll be looking for with that pick 18. Their starting five is pretty locked and loaded at this point, or in their top six players is pretty locked and loaded as well, and just getting some extra depth pieces for a bench unit that was terrible is going to be is pretty important for this team, making that step from getting into the playoffs to winning some playoff games and maybe getting a seventh or a sixth seed and really challenging to win a playoff series. That's going to be the aim for this team moving forward. I mentioned at the start of the show that this episode is brought to you by Fantrax, and if you haven't checked out Fantrax.com, you really need to, and if you don't know what Fantrax.com is, well, just take a second and have a listen to what I'm going to say, because Fantrax is the best place to host all of your fantasy leagues, whether it's basketball, which I assume most of them are, but you've got football season coming up, you've got college football, they do college basketball, baseball, hockey, NASCAR, golf, any sport that you can imagine, Fantrax hosts. And not only do they host all these sports, but they have the most customization you can possibly find in any free casual league. They also have a premium option, a commission, a premium option, which is a tremendous value given all the options that you can put in there. You just go onto the site, read through the FAQs. That's what I recommend you do. Go and just read through the FAQs and just see the amount of things that you can do. Contracts for players, salaries for players, minor league squads, drafted players who are stashed in Europe can be added to your teams. These players aren't available in ESPN. They're not available on Yahoo. You can add all these guys. You can add college players onto your NBA team. As I know, people in dynasty leagues will do that. You're allowed to draft one college player per year. You can do that in Fantrax. You can add these college players onto your roster, keep them there, and stash them for the next season. All the stat options you can want, any sort of customization, schedule-wise, how many weeks do you want your playoffs? Do you want to merge weeks into 2 weeks into one? Do you want to play in a really deep league? ESPN limits you at 20 leagues. 20 teams in the league. Fantrax shouldn't go more than that. You can play more than one opponent per week. Any sort of option that you want on Fantrax, it's there. There's great free options, a superb premium option. I do recommend you check out Fantrax, and we're going to be hosting all the Red Rock Listener Leagues over there this year, and we're currently in the process of setting up the Red Rock 30-team Dynasty League. I think I have 22 spots full at the moment. If you have sent in an application and haven't heard back, that does not mean that you've missed the cut. I am just agonizing over these last 8 spots. I've probably got about 50 or 60 applications to go through to get down to these 8 spots. So some of you are going to miss out, no doubt. And I hope you guys don't take offense if you do miss out. But there will be another Red Rock Dynasty League coming up later in the off-season, a real salary cap league. There'll be another Red Rock Dynasty League a bit later on. Plus, there'll be all the standard redraft Red Rock Listener Leagues as well. So there will be spots for all of you there. But we're just currently trying to round out the roster for the Red Rock 30-team Dynasty, which I discussed at length at the start of the Houston Rockets Season in Review podcast. So if you want to listen to the format of that, which is a really, really interesting format, go and check out the start of the Rockets podcast. We're talking Detroit Pistons now, not talking Rockets. We've talked a little bit about them. Let's look at their free agency situation heading into next season. They're pretty good in terms of who they've got coming off the books. They've got Steve Blake, who was, let's be honest, terrible this season. He's was on a $2 million deal last season. He's 36 years old. I don't think they'll be too worried if he leaves the camp. And Anthony Tolliver, who came across in a mid-season trade last season from Phoenix, he's an unrestricted free agent as well at the age of 31. The big one they have to make sure they deal with is Andre Drummond's restricted free agency. He's getting the max. They're signing him. There's always some doubt until it actually gets signed, but there's no doubt that Andre Drummond will be getting a max contract, and he will remain with the Detroit Pistons. You got a team option on Lorenzo Brown, who was signed late in the season. He's not a big deal. Spencer Dinwiddie's contract is non-guaranteed. He has shown basically nothing. But if Steve Blake happens to leave, maybe they keep Dinwiddie around, because I think that Dinwiddie does have some potential. And Darren Hilliard is got a non-guaranteed deal as well. I thought he was really impressive for a second-round pick, and there's zero chance that they cut him, I would say, at this point, because he showed enough. And they got Joel Anthony with a non-guaranteed $2.5 million deal, which he could eat very easily. Well, we know that he doesn't play a huge amount and at that age. And if they're looking to create some space, they could very easily get rid of Joel Anthony. So the core of this team is basically set, and just be some small minor moves you think they're going to be undertaking in free agency. But obviously trying to find a backup point guard with Steve Blake, not likely to... potentially returning, but you don't necessarily want him back. They're going to need a backup point guard. They're going to need some other power forwards as well. If Tolliver happens to leave. But all in all, I think that their free agency situation is looking pretty solid. I didn't mention this at the start of the podcast, but I'll do it now. If you are watching this podcast live and you want to interact with the show, tweet at me at redrock_bball. And you can interact with the show as it is going live to air. So if you have any comments or questions regarding the Detroit Pistons, send them my way, and we'll get to them on the show if we can. Let's look at their players now and talk about the fantasy value of these guys over the last season. Reggie Jackson is the player we'll start off with. He had a tremendous end to his first campaign in Detroit last season after coming over from Oklahoma City, and averaged about 9 assists per game in that time frame. I was really super high on him coming into this season. I thought he was going to be a guy who was going to average quite a big chunk of assists. But he was a bit disappointing. In 9 cat leagues, he was ranked 90th. In 8 cat leagues, 61st. That's a big difference, and that's pretty standard for point guards because of that turnover category. It's such a big deal. But what happened with Jackson? This is a key feature of Stan Van Gundy teams, is that point guards don't play minutes. He played under 31 minutes per game, as far and away the best point guard on this team. Yes, Brandon Jennings was around at some point, but let's be honest, Brandon Jennings was about 10% Brandon Jennings and wasn't really impacting Jackson. And even when Jennings went, it wasn't like Jackson was all of a sudden getting 37, 38 minutes a night. Van Gundy just does not play his point guards more than that 31-minute zone, and it's going to have an actual ceiling on what Jackson can do. As I said, he was 90th in 9 cat, 61st in 8 cat leagues. Yeah, not bad numbers, but look at his 8 cat per 36 value, 44th. So he was really good given the minutes that he was able to play. He averaged in that time 18.8 points, hit 1.5 threes, which is a downside to his game, but 1.5 threes at 35% is a real improvement for him. 3.2 rebounds, 6.2 assists, 0.7 steals on 43 and 86. Now, the assists is a disappointment because he was so good last season, averaging stacks of assists. But what he did over the last couple of months of the season, he did crank those numbers up a little bit and started to look a little bit better. So I think that we can expect maybe a jump towards the 7-assist mark next season as the team sort of coalesces and gets more used to each other, which there was a little bit of a problem with that at the start of the season. Lack of steals is always going to be something that does hold Jackson back from being a top 40 type of player. But I think that, again, he finished 61st this season. He could very comfortably be a top 50 guy. And if you're looking for 6 assists and decent scoring with some okay threes and a nice free throw percentage in the mid rounds, he is going to be a guy that sits at that level for quite an amount of time. I don't really see any reason why he drops off at any time in the near future. If you look at his advanced numbers, he had an on-off number, which was one of the best on the team at 5.2. Yeah, pretty impressive there. His win shares, 6.9, given, again, that he played the fourth most amount of minutes on the team. He finished second in win shares. His offensive box score plus-minus led the team by a long way. Defensively, a little bit to be desired with a negative 1.6, but overall, yeah, good numbers. He was the team leader in box score plus-minus. He had a PER of almost 20, and true shooting a little bit disappointing, but overall, I think you have to say that Reggie Jackson was a success, and you scoff at the contract that he got, and when we head into this offseason, it's going to look brilliant. He's on a chunk of money, definitely. But is it enough of a chunk of money where you think that is a ridiculous contract, which many people were decrying it as over the last offseason? How can you give Reggie Jackson $80 million? It's a joke. We're going to be looking at these contracts coming out now. And the Pistons knew this. They knew that the salary cap was going to be jumping. He's going to be paid $15 million next season, $16 the year after that, $17 the year after that. These are not big contracts. He's a guy that if he was on the open market this season, he'd be demanding $20, $21 million a year. So relatively bargainish. He's at 26 years of age, so he's got definitely a few years of his prime left. He hasn't really reached his basketball prime. So a lot to be happy about if you are a Reggie Jackson owner in fantasy and if you're a Detroit Pistons fan. He's going to be that player who ranks between 40 and 60, I think, for most years of his prime, the next 3 or 4 years. And that's as solid as it gets. But again, that Van Gundy cap on minutes is going to prevent him from being a top 30 player or even a top 25 player. I don't think he's ever going to be able to get to that sort of area. Toby Harris came across mid-season in a trade, which I talked about on the Orlando Magic podcast, was ludicrous, in my opinion, trading Ersan Ilyasova and Brandon Jennings in exchange for Harris. Ludicrous on behalf of the Magic, great for the Pistons. And this was their free agency acquisition. Getting a guy who was recently tied up on a long-term deal, which again is going to look like a pretty nice deal when all is said and done. Harris is earning $17 million next season, $16 the year after that, and less than $15. So he's on a declining sliding scale contract. He is 23 years old, Toby Harris, 23. By the end of that contract, he's going to be, let me just do some maths, he's going to be 26 years old by the end of the contract, and he will still be entering his prime. It is one of the better deals, I think, that has been done in NBA over the last couple of years. You might not love Toby Harris as a player. I do, and I think that fantasy-wise, he looks tremendous. He was a 58th-ranked player for the season. Improved when he got to Detroit, 45th post All-Star, and that's for 9-cat. 8-cat, we're talking 67th. So really, really good numbers, and he's got the scope to improve, and I think that's a key part of what he can do. He averaged 14.7 points this year, which was down from what he averaged in Orlando last season. Hit a three, had 7 rebounds, got you 2.5 assists, got a steal, half a block, shot 47 and 84%. These are great numbers. If he takes his three-point percentage back up to 36 as he was last season, which probably seems unlikely because he's never been a great three-point shooter. Maybe that 14-15 campaign was the outlier. But he's shown that he can do it at a fairly high rate for an entire season. I think that Harris can get that scoring average up to maybe 16 points. He's going to be a 7-rebound guy. He'll be a guy that gets you pretty nice numbers. But we have to look at what he did in his time after coming across from Detroit, Orlando, because that gives us more of an idea. And he averaged 3 points per game more. He averaged less steals, but he averaged more assists, slightly less rebounds, shot a ridiculous 91% from the free throw line, and shot 38% from three. Now, the 38% from three is probably a little bit unrealistic to expect, but with better players around him and playing in a different system, I think that we can expect an improvement in his three-point shooting. We can expect an improvement in his scoring, and he can be the guy that I wouldn't be shocked if next season he leads the team in scoring. It was Reggie Jackson this season, but I won't be shocked if Toby Harris does that next season. I've been big on Harris for a couple of years, And his age, he is so, so young. He has got a lot ahead of him. He, when he arrived, this team was a 2.7 on-off number, which is, you know, okay. It's nothing great. But he's clearly part of their main core moving forward. He's going to be a starter. He's going to play 33, 34 minutes a night for the next 5-6 years. He is a great dynasty investment for me. And I think you'll find him being a top 50 player at some point in the next 2 seasons and be able to hold that ranking for about 3 or 4 years. That is how good I think Toby can be. He can really improve. And could he be a guy that averages 20 points in a season 1 year? I reckon he's got that potential. Whether he does it consistently is maybe a little bit more doubtful, but he can be a player who does it. I think he's got so much upside. He is tremendously young, and we often forget just how young he is. Andre Drummond is also pretty young. He's just 22 years old, coming into restricted free agency. I talked about him at the start, and he's got one of those players, when you look at his rankings, okay, in 9-cat, he was ranked 121st. Cool. In 8-cat, he was ranked 87th. But those numbers are bullshit, and I've railed against, you know, using rankings as the be-all and end-all of things for pretty much the whole season, because what does that mean for Andre Drummond? You either punted free throws and you loved him, or you didn't, and you avoided him completely. 87 is a bullshit ranking. It means nothing for Andre Drummond. So that's when we go to our punting rankings. And if we could do an 8-2 punt, he was ranked 15th. If you do a 9-2 punt, he was ranked 15th. And that is exactly what Andre Drummond brings. If you own him, you know that free throws are done. So why do they count in his overall ranking? They shouldn't, because you look, and it's a problem for him. And it's a bit of a concern with him in terms of just staying on the court, but hopefully the NBA does do something to fix the intentional foul rule, which will allow him to, and not fixing it for him, just fixing it for the fact that it's just incredibly painful to watch. And I've had that argument on the show plenty of times, but it's going to help him moving forward. Just even if he ekes 2 more minutes out of that and stays on the court, he's got top 10 potential. Now, he was sort of overshadowed a little bit this season by Hassan Whiteside as the punt free throw big man. He's got DeAndre Jordan there for competition, but all these guys are sort of second round. Hassan, you might say, is a first round player, second round value in a head to head system because of what they can do. Now, Drummond led the NBA in rebounding. He played 33 minutes a game, 16.2 points. He had 14.8 rebounds, which is just such a massive amount. He had 0.8 assists. Yeah, that's not his strength. But 1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks, 52%. Yes, he was 36% from the free throw line at 7.2 free throw attempts. You cannot recover from that. It is literally impossible to recover from that free throw percentage. So don't even try. Do not ever draft Andre Drummond. Go, oh, I'm going to draft Curry. I'm going to draft Durant and Harden. You still won't. You still can't beat it. You still can't get back to even average. So don't even try it with Andre Drummond. Just punt it and be done with it. You've got no other option. And that's why I would never draft Andre Drummond in a rotisserie format. Normally I do the listener questions at the end of the show. There was a question that I think I'll touch on now. It comes from John Murphy. How were Drummond's numbers affected by the Harris trade? That's a fair enough question. So we look at him in terms of his pre and post All-Star splits. What he did do is he played 2.5 less minutes. And some of that was because he had some defensive lapses. Some of it was because of the hacking issue. But what he did is he scored less points. He went down from 17 to 14.7. The Pistons went more perimeter, driven with Harris being that extra option there out on the wing. Rebounding was the same. His assist numbers were the same. Everything else was very similar. He actually shot a higher percentage, which I think is something that can be consistent if Harris is out there allowing Drummond to play sort of deeper in and not necessarily have to push him out as far, which is what was happening earlier on. And it's happened under Van Gundy quite a bit for Drummond to sort of play away from the basket. He's a guy who should be a 56% shooter, and I think that can come. He looks a little lost at times out on the court offensively, and it is a concern for him. But the massive rebounding numbers you're getting, pretty good field goal percentage, great steal numbers as a center, and 1.5 blocks. He still has tremendous upside. He can get better. He's probably not going to average more than 15 rebounds a game many times, but could he get to 2 blocks a game? Could he average 16 points a game? These things are all definite possibilities. So if you're set up to punt or you want to go down that route, you don't look at his ranking and go, he's the 77th ranked player. He's a top 15 guy. That's exactly where he is, and that's the way that you should be treating the game of Andre Drummond. If we have a look at his advanced numbers, he led the team in win shares pretty comfortably. We led the team in box score plus minus if you don't include Joel Anthony's 96 minutes played. But offensively, he's a real negative. He's a negative 2.1 in that zone. And defensively is what he does with the rebounding, with the shot blocking, with the steals, with just the presence as well. But he can improve his offense, and I think that that's something that will come again. He's only 22 years old. When he gets to 25, 26, I think we'll see a much more refined game from him offensively. Whether that becomes even average or not, we don't know. But he's scoring 15 points basically on putbacks at this point and lobs. There is the potential that he can have a 20 and 15 season. It feels like a bit of a stretch, but at 22 years of age, he's got huge, huge room to grow. So just don't be too put off by Andre Drummond. He is extraordinarily young as well, and this team is young. Harris, Drummond, Jackson, they're all really, really young. So make sure that you've got that in mind for Drummond, and you realize that how much he can still grow and how much better he can get, because I think we're going to see, or I'm almost certain we're going to see, much better numbers from him moving forward. The next player is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I'm an unabashed KCP fan. I really like what he can do. He led this team in on-off numbers. He was an 8.5. He is one of the better perimeter defenders in the game. He was the 86th ranked player in 9 cat leagues and 94th in 8 cat leagues, but he took a bit of a hit. Now, we talk about what did Drummond's numbers do when Harris came across. Caldwell-Pope took probably a bigger hit than what Drummond did. And he saw his ranking drop pretty significantly in that post-All-Star area. He went from 73rd pre to 122nd post-All-Star break. And if we break down what his actual numbers look like in that time, my screen has just disappeared. I'll have to bring that up. I'll talk about that in a sec. Let's look at his actual overall numbers. Caldwell-Pope averaged, played 37 minutes, a stack of minutes for him, which that could very easily come down. We'll talk about that when we get to Stanley Johnson. But 37 minutes a game, averaged 14.5 points at 1.5 threes, 3.7 rebounds, almost 2 assists, 1.5 steals, 42 and 81, but only a 31% three-point shooter, which is a bit of a concern for him. He needs to be able to hit those threes. He did it at 35% last season, and he needs to get better at that, definitely. He did improve his scoring, but he hit less threes. And what he was able to do, and this is something that does take a few years, he turned his great perimeter defense into tangible numbers. So he's gone from 1.9 to 1.1 to 1.5 steals per game. And that's turning that actual good defense into stats that we can use for fantasy. If we look at what he did now, I've got the pre and post All-Star numbers up. His scoring numbers, basically the same. His rebounding numbers, his assist numbers, basically the same. But we saw his steal numbers drop a little bit. We saw his shooting drop a little bit. We saw his free throw percentage drop by 4% as well, and his three-point percentage drop by a percent too. So drop-offs in certain areas, but it's more, if you look at that ranking drop, yes, he had a slight drop-off, but it's more other players getting better as well that contributes to that 40 or 50 spot difference in the ranking. So I'm not overly concerned about it, but the appearance of Toby Harris did have some sort of impact on Caldwell-Pope. Van Gundy clearly loves him. He's loved him for the first two seasons that he's been there. He's going to continue to play him pretty good minutes, although Johnson could start to cut into that playing time. But he's a guy that I think has got probably top 75 upside, Caldwell-Pope, and he wasn't far off that this season, obviously finishing as 86th and 94th in 9 and 8 cat leagues. He can get better. Those steals, he could be a guy who's a 1.73 is a 2 steals guy. He could average 16 points. He doesn't do much in the rebounding and assist numbers, but I think that we can see a slight increase in his 3-point percentage, which will then take up his field goal percentage. So he's a guy that I'm very interested to see develop. Again, he's really young. He's only played 3 seasons in the NBA. He's 23 years old. There's lots of room for him to grow. He finished 4th on his team in defensive box score plus minus. The first three players were Anthony, Drummond, and Baines. And then you got Caldwell-Pope. So that's impressive to me. 4th on the team in box score plus minus. Again, impressive. 4th in win shares. Again, pretty impressive. PER didn't love him. He was a 12.4 there, and the true shooting percentage isn't ideal at 52, but that's stuff that can all come for him, and I do really have high hopes for Kentavious, for KCP, for him to put up some impressive numbers moving forward. Can he ever be a top 50 player? Yeah, I think he definitely can be a top 50 player. I think he probably tops out at top 40, but that's the sort of range that I think that he can get to in the next, say, 3 seasons if you're looking to acquire him in Dynasty. I wouldn't say he's a lock to get there. I wouldn't say he's a lock to get to a top 50, but I'd say he's probably a 25% chance, and that's not bad if someone just doesn't like what he does and are a bit disappointed with the way that he ended the season. Marcus Morris, one of the surprise players of the year, definitely a guy that should have been in consideration for most improved player. He posted an on-off number of 6.7, which was third on this team. Finished the season as the 128th ranked player in 9 cat leagues and 115th in 8 category leagues. But the thing with him is per 36 numbers are terrible. 332nd, 338th in 9 and 8 cap per 36 because he played so many minutes. He played 36 minutes a game and averaged 14 points. He had 1.5 threes, 5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 0.8 steals on 43 and 75. It's thoroughly mediocre. And he was a guy that at the start of the season you had to own. But when you look at his overall numbers, he's sort of maybe I own him, maybe I don't, maybe I move him on and off the bench. He suffered a drop when Toby Harris came across, but then got stronger again at the end of the season. But if someone is going to lose out on playing time on this team, I think it's going to be Marcus Morris. Now, he is still only 26 as well, and he is on a ludicrously cheap contract, less than $5 million next season and locked up for the next 3 years. These are ridiculously cheap. Even if he's not a starter and he's playing 26 minutes off the bench, it's tremendous. And he's a guy that... Is he a guy that's draftable next season? I'm not sure that he is because I'm not sure how high his upside is. If he had a breakout season this year, put together these numbers and finished 120th, is he worth taking with your 13th pick, your 12th pick, so that he can give you the same sort of output? I'm not sure how much he improves because I think that he did a lot of his improving this season, and he's the guy that's in danger of me of losing minutes to a guy like Stan Johnson. Now, Morris still is going to have a role, and he and Toby Harris will be able to play. If Johnson gets more into the rotation, they'll play some of that backup four if Anthony Tolliver happens to leave, and that's some more flexibility that Van Gundy's got. But he's a guy that if someone's enamored by what they saw, and sometimes he would put up numbers where he'd score just crazy, crazy scoring nights, and people love crazy scoring nights. So if you can get someone who's a top 75 player back for Marcus Morris, that person who's trading with you is making a mistake, but you take advantage of that. And I would be really investigating that sort of stuff and trying to get that because I do think that he's going to have somewhat of a downtick. And at this early point, I don't think that he's a player that I'd be looking at really drafting in your 12-team leagues because, again, great season, but when you're a great season and it's a breakout and you finish 120th, I don't have much faith that you're going to really be able to put up a top 100 year at any point in your career. I could be wrong. I was wrong about him this season, but that's the way that I see Marcus at the moment. If we look at his advanced numbers, they're pretty good. He finished third on the team in win shares. Can't really complain there. A decent box score plus minus at fifth. Yeah, solid offensive player, solid defensive player. Nothing too spectacular on either end. Again, a below average PER like a couple of these players, but really solid VORPs. True shooting a little bit below average as well. And they do the team as a general needs to work on its true shooting. I think only one player or two players really sat above average in the true shooting percentage, and that was Reggie Bullock and Toby Harris. The next player we'll talk about is Stan Johnson, the number 8 pick in the NBA draft. You would have heard and you would have seen my Basketball Monster colleague Kyle McEwen basically pitching a tent in his pants every time that he would speak about Stan Johnson. He thinks that Johnson's the second coming of Michael Jordan, wrapped into Kawhi Leonard and James Harden. Johnson was impressive at times. He struggled mightily at other times. But when we had Kentavious Caldwell-Pope out with a groin injury and Johnson stepped in, he was great. Back to a bench role, struggled, but I thought he showed some massive balls in the playoffs, came out with some huge cockiness against LeBron, put up some pretty decent performances, and as a rookie, a freshman, I don't think you can really complain too much about Johnson. Now, the fantasy numbers weren't great, 296 in 9-cat, 249th in 8-cat, a negative 6.4 on-off numbers. These aren't the things that champions are made of, but he logged 23 minutes on a playoff team as a rookie, impressive, 8.1 points, a 3 a game, 4 rebounds, a steal a game, slightly less, 38% from the field, 78% from the line, and 31% from three. We see that 38% go to 43%. We see the 31% from three go to 34%. And now we're talking about a guy averaging 12 points, averaging 1.2 triples. Yeah, he can grab 5 rebounds. He can get 1.5 steals a game. and he can go from 23 minutes upwards. He can play the 2, he can play the 3, he can play the 4 in a real pinch, but they don't need to because they'll just put Toby there. They'll put Marcus Morris there. And then you know, you have Stan playing the 3, playing the 2 when Caldwell Pope's out. He gives him tremendous flexibility. Now, I mentioned that maybe Caldwell Pope sees a reduction in minutes. Maybe Morris sees a reduction in minutes. The other thing we've got to consider is that, yes, Tolliver might go, but Jody Meeks is going to be back. And he's going to play some of those minutes at the 2 as well and be out there for shooting. But I think Stan takes a big leap forward next season. He might play 26 to 27 minutes a night. And he would be entering the consciousness of standard leagues. Probably not. Probably more of a 16-team guy who's ranked about 170th. But that's a jump up from 290th this year. And I think when he hits his third season, he should be a lock for the top 100. So in Dynasty, he's a pretty impressive target. Someone that you, I think, can feel pretty confident you're going to get top 70 seasons out of. Whether that's in 2 or 3 seasons, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure that by the end of his rookie deal, we would have seen at least one top 100 year out of Stan Johnson. In terms of his his advanced numbers, they weren't that pretty. A negative 2.6 in box score plus minus, just a 0.6 win shares and a terrible win shares per 48. He's got a lot of room to grow. He had a 8.7 PER, 46% true shooting, a lot of things not really looking great. But what I like to look at with rookies is if they post positive defensive box score plus minuses. And if you're a positive defensively as a rookie, the offense is going to come. Now, he was negative 3.1 offensively, but 0.5 defensively. The offense comes. It's almost a general rule that every player who's a rookie will shoot 4 to 5% better in their second season, from 3, from the line even, from the field. So all that offensive efficiency comes back. You figure it out, you get more assists. But if you're already a positive defender, and it doesn't happen very much for rookies to be a plus defender. If you're already one of them, you've got a huge, huge leg up. You just get back to average, you know, offensively, and you become a really key rotation player. You become good offensively, which Johnson's got the ability to, then it's huge. And that's something that's really important to look at for me, is looking at rookies who are posting positive advanced defensive numbers, because they've got one side figured out. Often the hardest part to figure out, the other stuff will really come in the next 2 to 3 seasons. So that's something I do like about Stan. Aaron Baines, bit of a head-scratching contract in the off-season, but again, when you look at it now, it's $6.5 million for the next 2 seasons with 1 as a player option. It doesn't look crazy at all, but he was terrible. He wasn't good at all. He was a negative 7.1 on off. He ranked 250th for 9-cat in the full season, 259th in 8-cat. But if Drummond ever had to sit or was in foul trouble, you knew that Baines would come in and he'd get the job done. And that's pretty much all you can ask for. Now, I said he was terrible. He was terrible in that role with the bench, but put him with the starters, I thought he was really good. And he filled that role. And when Drummond would have to be taken out and Baines would come in, you know he's going to knock down his free throws. He averaged 6.3 points and 4.7 rebounds. He got 0.6 blocks at 51 and 76%. That's really impressive stuff from Baines. And if for some reason, you know, touch wood, that Drummond gets an injury, you'd feel relatively confident of trotting him out there for 28 minutes and getting nothing spectacular, but getting good defense and getting efficient shooting and decent offense. He's an okay player. Didn't have the best of season, but again, playing him with the starters, he looked good. He had a positive defensive box score plus minus. His win shares were right up there at 4.1, one of the top numbers on the team as well. And it was his fantasy numbers that really suffered, and some of his on-off numbers. But overall, you have trust in him. I think that's as a Pistons fan, you'd have trust in him. Now, where does he fall in terms of fantasy? He's 29 years of age. He's not ever going to be a starting center in this league outside of injury that happens during a season. But you're in a 20 deep league. You can consider him as a big that won't hurt your percentages and can get you some block shots, and has that tremendous upside to really start to put together top 100 numbers if the starter is out. And you're getting someone, as a big man, especially in those deeper leagues, who doesn't hurt a percentage, is tough to do. And Baines can be that guy. Steve Blake was not good. Nothing really was spectacular about him. A negative 5.3 on off, 347th in 9-cat leagues, 309 in 8-cat leagues. As I said, he's 36 years old. He's an unrestricted free agent. He played 17 minutes a game, and the Pistons won't want to be in a situation where they have to rely on Steve Blake to play 17 minutes a game. He averaged 4.5 points, a 3 a game, 3.5 assists, 0.4 steals, 39 and 80. Now, the assist numbers are great, 3.4 in 17 minutes. He had to step up his role when Brandon Jennings was traded you know, at the start of the season, he wasn't even in the rotation at times, and hence why he only played the 58 games, and that says something for him. I don't think that he'll be back with this team, and I don't think he's going to sign anywhere to be a backup point guard. If he does sign anywhere, he'll be a third stringer. At 36 years of age, I think you would rather take a punt on a second round draft choice from this upcoming draft than get Steve Blake onto your roster at this point. In terms of his advanced numbers, nothing really to write home about. Negative offensively, negative defensively, you're below 10 PER, poor VORP. He's clearly on the downside of his career, so nothing to get overly interested about with Blakey. Anthony Tolliver I thought was decent this season. I thought he was underused at times, but once Toby Harris and Marcus Morris were joining forces in the front court, his ability as a stretch four is sort of not needed as much when both those guys can do it, and he played with Ersan Ilyasova in front of him for big chunks of the season. 289th in 9 cat leagues, but a severe drop off after Harris arrived. He went from 235th to 335th, so a drop of 100 spots post All-Star break. He ended up playing 19 minutes a game and averaged 5.3 points. In that 19 minutes, he did hit 1.5 threes, which is a pretty impressive number. Got 3 rebounds and shot 38 and 62. So really hurt you on your percentages, but still a 36% shooter from 3-point land. Anthony Tolliver's really going to fit in as that nice bench stretch four guy who plays 20 minutes, hits a three a game, and at this point, he's really a deep league stream option if you need threes. He doesn't do a huge amount aside from that. He's not... You know, we know who he is. I think he was marginally underused this season. He was an absolute negative. No, that's not true. He was a complete zero for box score plus minus. Zero in offensive, zero in defensive, zero in total. A complete league average player there. He was a league average player in win shares per 48. He was about as average as you can get in all those advanced metrics. Put up a pretty solid 54% true shooting percentage. But again, he in deep leagues, he's not getting better, but he is a nice source of three-pointers, an out-of-position source of three-pointers, which is really, at this point in the NBA, it's not really out of position anymore. Jody Meeks played 3 games. Disappointing season for him with that foot issue. He did hit 1.3 triples per game, and I think that he is going to be a player who really should get himself into the top 200 next season. He ranked 340th this season, 360th for the season, in 8 cat leagues. I think that he really can make an impact heading into next season. The Pistons need some contribution from that bench, and when Steve Blake was the guy running it, Meeks is going to have to play a bigger role. So I think that he can be a guy that he played 15 minutes a game in his 3 games. He might get 15, he might get 17 minutes a game. He is going to come in and be a shooter off the bench, which is something that obviously Van Gundy loves. Having these guys who can play, you know, 1-in-5, 4 out sort of lineups with Drummond or with Baines, and Meeks is going to want to have to show that he's not washed up. Now he's 28 years old. He's playing in a contract year next season at $6.5 million, which again is going to seem like pretty much a bargain deal. Not overly old. I don't really think he's ever going to be a starter again in the NBA. But in terms of what he can do fantasy-wise, it's three-pointers, and that's really about it. He's a pretty good free-throw shooter. He didn't miss a free throw in his 3 games. He's a really good three-point shooter. He shot 44% from 3, but again, it's ridiculously low sample size, so not reading too much into that at this point. Reggie Bullock, complete non-factor in Los Angeles with the Clippers, complete non-factor in Phoenix with the Suns, came across in the Marcus Morris trade, and was a non-factor for most of the season. He was a negative 7.2 on-off, 345th in 9 cat leagues, but post All-Star break, he jumped his ranking up to 180th, and he showed me something that I didn't know that he had. He took big steps forward to be a guy that, look, you know what, I talked about Meeks before, maybe Van Gundy has faith in Bullock, and goes, well, Jody, you're sort of got no contract coming up, you're injury prone, you had that shoulder problem or the back problem in your first season, the foot problem this year. Yeah, Reggie Bullock showed a bit. He averaged 3.3 points. Again, not much, but 0.6 triples at 42% is impressive. 93% from the line is impressive. He got your 2 rebounds a game in his 12 minutes. These are pretty good numbers for a wing. If we look at his per 36 splits, he took a big leap forward this year. He hit more threes, he scored more points, he grabbed more rebounds, he had way more assists, and shot 12% better from the field. He shot almost 25% better from the free throw line and over 10% better from the three-point line. This is what he came into the league as a three-point shooter. And he didn't show it at all in his first two seasons. A lot of that's because if I look at how many minutes he played in his first two seasons, he played less than 800 minutes in his first two seasons combined. He only played 450 this season, but what he was able to do in that second half of the season, he showed me that he can belong in this league. And he shot his last 14 games, he shot 53% from the field. A 46% shooter as a shooting guard, it's tremendously efficient. I really do think that the Bullock, is there a chance he's a top 200 guy next year? There's a slim chance, but he's definitely a top 250 guy in my mind. And maybe Van Gundy pushes Meeks away or pushes him back into the rotation and allows Bullock to play. He maybe plays a bit of backup three, a bit of backup two, and being a bit of a sharpshooter out there. I talked about Darren Hilliard already. I thought he was impressive. He only played 38 games, but averaged 4 points in his 10 minutes, which is great, half a three, and has got heaps of room to grow. As a second rounder, I think that the Pistons should be really wrapped with what they got out of Hilliard. And to get, I said the bench was bad, but the bright spots were Bullock and Hilliard really starting to show something. Hilliard didn't really show up fantastically advanced stats-wise, but at least he put up a PER of over 10, which a number of their players didn't do. So he was a guy that I thought was impressive enough to me to make sure that they guarantee his contract, and someone who's got a little bit of hope to build on for the future. Now, I still think he's behind Bullock, he's behind Meek, so in a dynasty league, you're going to have to be going almost 350 deep to really be considering Darren Hilliard, but he showed enough in the starts that he got that I think that he can play in this league and he can be a rotation piece, and he's got top 250 upside throughout his career, maybe top 200, so he's not worth a huge amount, but I do think that he can play and he should be drafted in pretty much any league that is that's going over say 270 players. I think that he should be a guy that's looked at there. Joel Anthony, not much to really say about Anthony. He played just 19 games at 5 minutes apiece, still blocked 0.6 shots, and if there's a situation where Baines is out or Drummond's out and you know that Anthony's going to play 12 minutes and you need blocks, he's as good a chance of any of getting you 5 blocks in a big, big bunch. That's really all that Anthony can do. The fantasy ranks aren't great. 388th in 9-cat, 414th in 8-cat leagues. He averaged less than a point a game, but he did shoot 60% and 75% from the field. But really, what are we talking about with Joel Anthony? He's not going to be someone who's going to be all that interesting moving forward. He posted a tremendous win shares per 48. Again, 96 minutes, pretty low. Defensive box score plus minus a 5, tremendous. But offensively, he's a nothing. And he's old. He's 33 years old. He's still sort of floating around. But there's a big chance that he's not on this team or not on any team next season, given the fact that he's got a non-guaranteed contract. Let's talk Spencer Dinwiddie, who's really battled injuries and poor form, knee problems, shoulder problems. He was the 461st ranked player in 9-cat leagues. That's almost the worst player in the NBA. 451 in 8-cat leagues. He played 12 games. He averaged less than 5 points and less than 2 assists on 36 and 58%. Depending on what happens with Steve Blake, they might guarantee his contract and keep him around, but he hasn't really shown much. I did think that Dinwiddie coming out of the draft was a really good pick in the second round coming off that ACL. I thought he could recover and start to put together some nice seasons, and I'm still not convinced that he won't, but I think that he's never going to be a starter caliber player. He's probably going to top out as a backup who plays 17 to 18 minutes and maybe gets you 3 to 3.5 assists, and that can be useful in certain formats, but for most people, they're not going to have to bother too much with Spencer Dinwiddie at any stage in their NBA watching or fantasy career. He was a negative in defense, negative in offense, in all advanced metrics, just not a great season for Big Spence. That's it for the Detroit Pistons. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to answer the questions that you guys sent in regarding this team. Detroit Pistons, let's look at the questions that you guys have sent through. I've already answered some of these, which is what generally happens during the show. They sort of just come up in general conversation. The first one, I said John Murphy, we talked about Drummond's numbers affected by Toby Harris, so we're done with that one. Joseph Diffenbach, the king of Facebook questions, says, which Piston will be the best draft value next season and which will make the biggest jump in the rankings? It's really hard to know because I don't know where the value is or what the ADP of these guys is. I think Toby Harris is going to be a top 50 player next season. I think Reggie Jackson's going to be a top 50 player next season as well. So they're two of the guys that I think. I think Stan Johnson takes the biggest jump in the rankings. I think Marcus Morris takes a little bit of a fall in the rankings. That's the way I'd be looking at them at this early point. James Conlon says, who will have more minutes this season, Harris or Morris? To me, it is Toby. Yes, Marcus played more minutes this season, but I think that he loses a couple. Toby gets an extra one or so, and maybe they take some from Marcus to give them to Stan Johnson. Stan Van Gundy might have a completely different perspective to me and really love what Marcus Morris brings, but I think that once you get a full training camp with Toby Harris, it'll allow him. Look, they might play similar. I think one more minute a game for Toby seems reasonable. Beben on Twitter at BebenBadass says, will this finally be Toby Harris's breakout year? He was the 58th ranked player this season, 45th post All-Star. Like, what do you consider a breakout? To me, he's already good. He's already tremendously underrated by so many people. And is breakout top 20? Well, he's not going to be a top 20 player. I can pretty much guarantee you that. But he could be a top 40 player and he should be a top 50 player. So I would say that he's already had a real quiet breakout last season. And I think that he's really going to improve. He is super young and I couldn't be more of a Toby Harris. I think I've got this Andre Drummond jersey up next to me. I think on the other side I'm going to be pairing it with a Toby Harris jersey when we head into next season and I bring the new swathe of jerseys through. All right, we are done for today's podcast, guys. The next one, I completely forgot which team I'm going to do next. I'll let you know. No, I'm not. It's the Portland Trailblazers. That's the next podcast. The Portland Trailblazers. If you need some NBA draft info, check out episode 606 with Sam Vecenie. We talked for an hour about the draft prospects, and there's a lot of great stuff in there. Again, if you haven't received an email saying you're into the 30-team Red Rock Dynasty League, don't fret. There are still positions available, and your application is still being considered. And if you miss out, I do apologize. I want to include everyone as much as I can, but there will be more Dynasty League opportunities as the off-season progresses. So make sure you're still listening, still giving a thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube, still leaving a review on iTunes, giving it 5 stars, and recommending it to your friends. I can't thank everyone enough who has done that so far. Big thanks to Fantrax for sponsoring the show. Big thanks to Basketball Monster as well, which I'm sure many of you guys would want to throw a thanks to Basketball Monster for all their work over the years and all. I don't want to say all my work, but yeah, you know what Basketball Monster is. You know how great the site is. And of course, Hardwood Paroxysm for all your other NBA related news and information and educational and exciting and entertaining articles. We are done today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.